from Tuscaloosa, Alabama. This is Aspect Radio. I'm Mr. Corey Kraft once again.
And I am Ben Flanagan. Thanks again for joining us for another episode this week. This is a very special one, actually, because we're going to be joined shortly by someone that Corey and I follow pretty closely on Twitter and online in general. It's Sasha Stone, who's responsible for Awards Daily Online, which is arguably the best awards tracker there is in the movie industry right now. She's someone who is just completely plugged into the Oscar race and the general awards races. So if you have any interest whatsoever in the Oscars, the Golden Globes, SAG, anything like that, then she is going to be one of the one-stop shops to find out what exactly is going on, what the trends are, and what films and people to spot and emerge in these races. So we'll go now to this interview with Sasha Stone from awardsdaily.com. So we're joined now by Sasha Stone from awardsdaily.com. You can find that at awardsdaily.com. You can follow her on Twitter at awardsdaily. Thanks so much for making time today. We really appreciate it. We're both big fans of what you do. We're ardent Oscar race followers, and you're certainly at the head of the pack in terms of the pundits who are keeping us updated each and every year. And it just seems to get more loaded each year with folks out there who are analyzing these races as early as the very beginning of the calendar year, and even sooner when you hear release dates for certain titles and folks who are attached to these movies. But it seems like this year is top heavy already with movies like 12 Years a Slave, Gravity, Captain Phillips, and American Hustle, which is yet to be released. Is there any reason to think anything else could emerge as a contender with those already on the table?
It's hard to say. First of all, thank you for having me. Thank you for asking me on your show. It's very cool and flattering to have been asked and all the nice things you said. So thanks. Yeah, that's the thing is, you know, always around this time of year, I think that we have too much time on our hands because, like, for instance, last year or the year before, the last 4 or 5 years, the Best Picture winner has just kind of already been there the whole time, you know, sort of like the nice girl at the dance that, you know, is just sort of sitting there. And it turns out you finally ask her to the dance and she's, you know, she's your soulmate and the love of your life. But, you know, just kind of, it's just always sort of sitting there and no one's really paying attention to it because there are so many people writing about the race and there's so much filler that is needed every day. I think in a way we kind of make a lot of drama where there isn't any. And that was certainly the case last year. But the great thing about that is that the bigger picture is to be talking about film at all and to be bringing people's attention to a lot of these movies, even if they're not going to win Best Picture. It's still nice to have them out there. They make money, they do well, so more movies like that get made. So in a way, it's all good. As to whether a film can break in right now, well, the thing about now is that movies are attacked the way political candidates are as soon as they look like a front runner. So that's why an early contender can run the gauntlet and do fine, because first of all, they're never seen as a front runner. And second of all, they've already passed the test. They've already run through the whole, you know, is it a true story? Is there, you know, is it politically correct enough? Whatever things are people are going to attach to it. So it can already, it's already been established, like Argo, for instance, which didn't have much of a scandal attached to it. And, you know, the problem with latecomers like Zero Dark Thirty is that they come out and they seem like, wow, that is the best movie of the year. That movie's going to take the Oscar race by surprise. Wow, it didn't hit the festival circuit. Coming out in November and December, it's going to totally win. Well, it doesn't, because all of those things happened to the film at the time, and there really wasn't time to sort of rebuild its image, if you will. Which sounds so stupid to say, but really kind of like that. You know, it's got too much baggage, so it won't win Best Picture. That's why it's harder for late breakers. People seem to be making a case right now for Saving Mr. Banks. Seems to be getting a lot of buzz, which I have no idea what that means, if it's real buzz or fake buzz, but it's there. American Hustle is all made up. The buzz is made up on that 100%. There's nobody, only one person I know who saw it, not to be trusted. And it's just all concept. It's all on the page. This is what we hope the movie's going to be. So really you're talking about 12 Years a Slave, Gravity, Nebraska. And that's it for the Best Picture race right now for the win. Oh, Captain Phillips, those four.
It surprises me that you say Nebraska because, I mean, you've got a guy like Alexander Payne who's been there before. Obviously, his movies have been nominated for Best Picture before. And you have Bruce Dern who made a huge impact and might figure into the Best Actor race. But the fact that it's black and white and it's still a question mark as to whether or not it's going to get a wide enough push to get enough eyeballs on it, you really think that it'll factor into the overall Best Picture race?
I have thoughts, though, since the beginning. I could turn out to be completely wrong, but something fishy is going on with Nebraska because, you know, he was last in the race was The Descendants, and they placed that movie really high to win. The Descendants was up against The Artist. Mm-hmm. It was the same type of story. The Artist was the one people kind of figured would win, but I believe The Descendants was the one that a lot of pundits, if you go back and look at them, a lot of them had that as number one. Well, it peaked too early, so it didn't have anywhere really to go but down. But this year with Nebraska, they're keeping it really, really quiet. It is a movie that's good enough to win Best Picture. It doesn't have any of the buzz. So I don't know what's going to happen. Like, is it just going to die a slow death and that's that? Or are they planning some kind of last minute rallying surprise that will bring the movie back up? So I don't know. But I think just the movie itself is a crowd pleaser. It's sentimental. I don't think anything can beat 12 Years a Slave right now. So
that was actually the subject of my next question, since 12 Years a Slave is finally coming off of this massively successful festival run into limited release this weekend. Obviously, we haven't seen it yet. I'm hoping to catch it very soon. But this notion of such a powerful film, such a reputedly difficult film, and such a explosive subject, is this a possibility, perhaps like The Descendants, of all of the critical attention being focused far too early on a film?
Yeah, there's some movies that just kind of live up to the hype, and 12 Years a Slave is one of those. Yeah. You know, it is hard to watch. It's not a movie that, you know, they deliver all the screeners during the holidays. It's like between Christmas and New Year's, or, you know, it's right around the holidays. So you're looking at your screener pile. Who's going to want to put on 12 Years a Slave? You know, who's going to want to watch that? Who's going to want to show that to the family? And, you know, you often define Best Picture by the one movie you can sit everybody down in front of. I mean, everybody. That was Argo last year. You could put any kid, any teenager, any from any walk of life and sit them down in front of Argo and they were going to like it. Or, you know, get it at least. But 12 Years a Slave is hardcore. I mean, it's art. There's no question about it. You're watching it. You're watching an art film. It's not the usual type of film that wins. But it has other factors that are going to push it through than just your average, ordinary, artsy movie. And that's why I think it's such a powerhouse. I don't think that a movie can get this close to winning Best Picture if they have a black director, for instance, and not win. I mean, it's just that you always got to figure if they're this close to making history, they're going to make history.
Sure, sure. And in fact, when the project was first announced, when you start hearing about what kind of movie this is, I personally heard a bit of a cynical, like, oh, well, obviously they're making that for Oscar bait, from people obviously who had not seen Hunger or Shame. And who were unfamiliar with the work of Steve McQueen. It's certainly one of my most anticipated movies of the year or of the season so far. And I'm looking forward to seeing that. But it does make one wonder, coming off of years past where these early favorites do sort of drop by the wayside, like in Toronto. But living up to the hype is certainly something that another pretty significant major success is doing in theaters right now. Alfonso Cuarón's Gravity, sort of slated, I suppose, to take that crowd pleaser blockbuster slot that the likes of Avatar and Inception and those sorts of things tend to do. Only this has a massive amount of critical support behind it too.
Yeah, you know, Gravity, I know a lot of people are predicting it to win because they're saying the Academy loves it, and I think that's certainly possible. It's hard for me to imagine that being the winner, knowing Academy as I do. They don't generally pick, well, first of all, they've never picked a 3D movie, so that would be new. They only have two cast members in it, and the Academy's ruled by actors, and they tend to vote for movies that are, you know, that have a pretty decent size ensemble. I can't remember the last film that ever won that had that few cast members. I guess I would have to look that up. But usually they tend to favor movies that have, you know, bigger casts than that. And so they would have to be kind of a younger set, I think, to go for Gravity. Mm-hmm. But we'll see. I think the studio is going to really push hard for it. And it is a crowd pleaser. And it is one you can sit anybody down in front of. So it's possible.
Well, you mentioned American Hustle and a lot of that buzz being nonsense at this point. And I think about prestige projects that certainly sound good and destined for Oscar glory on paper. They obviously don't always pan out, despite some pundits and fans insisting that they will dominate Oscars and the award season in general prior to their releases. I think of movies like Dreamgirls and Memoirs of a Geisha and perhaps this year's August Osage County. Where does this campaign truly start? The season seems to start earlier each year. Is it when a project gets greenlit now, when it wraps production? For the most part, it seems like people have to actually see these movies, enjoy them, and then talk about them before any movie carries any real weight into the competition.
Right. It reminds me of that line from Annie Hall where the guy at the L.A. party says, I have a thought. I have a notion. I'm thinking of turning it into a thought. Yeah. Or something like that. It's like, it's almost like nowadays people will read a script and they'll start talking about Oscars. So I'm just waiting for that one person who overhears someone talking at a party about a movie, and then that's an Oscar contender. The thing is that to a large degree, the fix is in with Oscar. I mean, to a large degree, you know that if a certain studio is handling a movie and a certain director is involved and a certain publicist is involved and a certain subject matter is involved and timing is involved, that there's a really good chance, an 80% chance, that that movie is going to go all the way. It's just the way it works. You know, they have their Oscar movies. It's a well-oiled machine. Slides right in, you know. And sometimes movies come in that aren't part of that, like The Artist certainly wasn't. But, you know, you can almost always predict a nominee based on that. I always think of Munich as the time when many of us Oscar washers really were embarrassed publicly. It was so long ago, no one remembers, but we were actually predicting Munich to win long before anybody had ever seen it. And I kind of learned my lesson that year because you know, based on the fact that it's Steven Spielberg and its subject matter, and everybody thought, oh, this is it. He's going to win Best Picture. Forget it. And of course, it didn't turn out that way. The opposite, actually. It barely nominated.
Well, you weren't that far off. I mean, it did get nominated, and Spielberg got nominated, and that was a pretty unusual year anyway.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's true. And maybe the hype and the buzz got it there, you know?
Yeah. You wrote something really interesting in your State of the Race column this week on awardsdaily.com, and I'm going to read a passage from it. You said, "Nothing can really stop the Oscar pundits from lifting a film to extreme heights. They, parentheses, we, are motivated by the desire to be right, and more than right, first to be right. That is the silly game we all have agreed to play, and there doesn't seem to be a way out of it." Now, when someone like Kyle Smith, whom you reference later in the column, when he declares a movie like 12 Years a Slave or any movie the surefire Best Picture winner, does a statement like that, obviously depending on how loud the voice is, does it really realistically do anything to push that movie further into the conversation or ahead of the others?
I actually think that does a movie harm. It challenges people to go, oh, yeah, really? Uh-huh, sure. That's Best Picture, please. You know, and it always has the opposite effect. That's why movies like to fly under the radar. That's why studios try to keep things on the down low as much as they can. They love it when a movie's like Argo and nobody is paying any attention to it. They love that. If they know they have the goods, if they know when they sit people down, the way they react to the movie, and the pundits are saying all kinds of crazy shit. You know, the pundits are saying whatever they want to say, and then the publicists are thinking, ha, you know, good luck with that. We know what we have, and we know what people are going to respond to. But yeah, I think that we do right now. It's reached a fever pitch that I've never seen anything like it before, and it's crazy making. It makes your blood pressure rise. You know, when you read stuff like Saving Mr. Banks is going to crash the Best Picture race. This is going to be the new movie. You know, and everybody runs over to that movie, and suddenly they wait to see it, and then either it's going to do that. It's going to be better than 12 Years a Slave, better than Gravity, and that's the movie to beat. Or no, more likely it's very good, but it's more of a Best Actress thing. You know. And if you do it long enough, you just kind of get tired of that, the ups and the downs and the excitement and then the disillusionment. So, you know, that's all.
It's funny because to make a proclamation like that for a big category like Best Picture seems to, I guess, cross this line between advocacy and journalism, I guess. And this is something I've always been curious about. There are so many bloggers out there who will write things like, you know, I'm hearing a whisper campaign or buzz is building for, let's hypothetically say, like James Gandolfini in Enough Said or Brie Larson in Short Term 12. You know, if I were an Oscar blogger personally, I would be praising those two performances in particular to the high heavens. And let's say hypothetically another Oscar blogger sort of picks up on that, that there's this echo chamber that starts. Do you think that this echo chamber on the internet could actually propel or start legitimate buzz for a candidate like that? Or is it all just still, no matter what, a case of people liking who they like and voting for what they want to vote for?
I think there's kind of two schools of thought on that. I've seen it happen both ways, where I've been starting the hype and helping to start and helping to keep the hype going for instance, In the Loop, mm-hmm. which getting a screenplay nomination. It totally came out of nowhere. Nobody thought it had a chance, but, you know, enough talk generated and pretty soon it got people to see it. And then, yes, a nomination. Same thing happened with Margin Call, J.C. Chandor's. I just kept hitting that hard and pretty soon other people started hitting it hard and pretty soon it got him a nomination. However, I tried it again with Middle of Nowhere with Ava DuVernay and that did not happen for her. And I hyped the shit out of that. And everybody else picked it up and everybody else was hyping it and going along with it. And it really seemed like she might get a nomination, but she didn't. So I think you can bring them to the movie with that. I think you can make them say, oh, look through their screener pile. Oh, Margin Call. I heard that was really good. You know, like maybe not they haven't read you, but maybe they've read someone who was referencing you or maybe they heard it at a party or something. And that will make people watch it. And once they watch it, they go, oh, yeah, that's great. You know, I don't think that they just vote for it without having watched it or seen it or liked it. But I do think Brie Larson, for instance, that performance is a total payoff. You know, if you get people to watch that movie, they're going to be really moved by her and by the film. However, the Best Actress race is so jam-packed right now that it's hard to imagine her breaking in because she's going to have to bump one of the big ones. And that's going to be tough.
This is obviously what you do. You're at it every day, and it's your job to analyze these races and spot these trends and predict the outcomes. But as a film fan, because I know that you're a film fan, do you ever get a little bogged down by the process? Do you remember it ever sort of negatively shaping the way you look at a movie that you might not mind otherwise? Like if your movie isn't getting the love that something else is, a movie you might like, yet you start to resent that movie just because it's winning and your favorite isn't?
It's called the artist effect, Ben.
Right.
Unfortunately, yes. I hate that about the Oscars. There's some movies I will never watch again in my life. And it's just because of how they were used and abused and sold at the Oscar race. I find that I discover a lot of movies after the race is over. I rediscover them, like Sideways was one of those. Because I was an Aviator fan and Sideways was and Million Dollar Baby were up against the Aviator, I had like a quiet grudge against Sideways. And then I came to it later. Now it's one of my favorite movies. And Coen Brothers, Burn After Reading, it tried to make it in the Oscar race. It just couldn't really fit. It wasn't sold right. It was, you know, it's a quirky, weird comedy. It's not Oscar bait. And so it was kind of written off. And that's another one that I rediscovered and love now. But there's no denying that I will never watch The Artist again. Never. I might watch Argo, maybe. But, you know, there's just something about it. It just becomes too ugly, you know, and you remember all the bad things when you're watching the movie. And especially if you feel like you were wrong, you know, and you watch it and you just remember the shame and the horror of having been wrong. Milk is one of those. Like, I thought Mickey Rourke was going to win to the very end. So I will never watch Milk because Sean Penn won, even though he was great and he totally deserved to win, you know. So it affects me in that way. And, you know, I've always loved movies. I'll always love movies and I will always watch them over and over again, no matter what.
That definitely happened to me back in 2010 with The King's Speech, which I thought was a great movie at the time, and I really enjoyed it, and I still do, but I just so wanted Social Network and Fincher to break through and win the big Oscars that year that it made me sort of resent The King's Speech, and I had to stop myself. But I do wonder, have you rediscovered War Horse, Sasha? Because I remember you were so anti-War Horse.
I know, it's true. I feel so bad about that. Why would you be so mean about a sweet little movie that was just trying to be a sweet little movie, you know? A lot of it is fighting between other pundits, you know? A lot of it is one pundit says that's going to win Best Picture, like Les Mis. You know, if a pundit is like Dave Karger saying, oh, Les Mis is going to win, all of a sudden, you know, your hatred and competition, our competitive streak takes hold. And suddenly the movie becomes more hateful than, you know, in any way it ever should have. I'll probably never watch War Horse again for that reason. And also it's a tearjerker. You know, I love Steven Spielberg. He's one of my favorite filmmakers. You just get caught up in the frenzy and the hype of it. And, you know, your worst qualities come out. Absolutely.
It's okay, Ben. Steven Spielberg redeemed himself the next year.
No.
So.
No.
Oh, come on.
No, y'all are going to gang up on me now. I know. Yeah. But let's talk a little bit about this year and what's happening this year. We both have just seen Captain Phillips recently, and Tom Hanks, somebody who has two Oscars and could win more, could score his sixth nomination this year with either Captain Phillips or his other film that he's going to be in, this movie that nobody has seen yet, Saving Mr. Banks. I mean, he's obviously in a unique situation this year with two films from two different studios possibly campaigning for the lead actor spot, unless Saving Mr. Banks falls into the supporting category. You know, he hasn't had a nomination since Castaway back in 2000. Do you feel like he's guaranteed a nomination for either or both? And is he due his first win possibly since 1994, not unlike Meryl Streep when she won for The Iron Lady after so many years?
Oh, my God. Meryl Streep.
I don't think that he'll win, but I can't imagine them not nominating him for the last 15 minutes of Captain Phillips, which, you know, some of the best acting you'll see all year just in those few minutes. But he's great in it. And, you know, the thing about Tom Hanks is he takes weird risks in his career. And I think people appreciate that, especially when he comes back to being such a solid actor. I don't see how he misses out on a nomination. The win is tough because you have three really strong contenders. I think Chiwetel Ejiofor is going to win for 12 Years a Slave. But if it isn't him, it's going to be Robert Redford for All Is Lost or Matthew McConaughey for Dallas Buyers Club.
Yeah, obviously we haven't seen All Is Lost or Dallas Buyers Club this year either, but personally I'm kind of on team McConaughey to pull off that fabled double nomination if they commit massive category fraud and slide him into supporting for Mud, which is one of my favorites of the year, and I think he's incredible and due as well for that, if I'm advocating personally.
Oh, that'd be great. But I think he would get into supporting for that, right?
Yeah, definitely.
You know, some might say that Blue Jasmine's release date might work against Cate Blanchett winning Best Actress. But, you know, you can look back at something like Penelope Cruz winning for Vicky Cristina Barcelona when that was released, I think, in August. Is the difference this time, Cruz, she obviously had the Weinstein Oscar machine behind her. Do you think that Sony Pictures can or will bring the necessary firepower to help Blanchett beat the late season contenders, especially, I guess, specifically Sandra Bullock and Gravity?
That's tough. Those two are you know, just going to be neck and neck. And Sandra Bullock's already won her lead. Cate Blanchett, not a likable character, and all this weird stuff is coming out about Woody Allen. And I don't know what that's going to do. I can sort of see her winning everything. If she starts winning everything, then that would be enough momentum for her to carry it through to the end. She's incredibly gracious, brilliant, charismatic woman. And so if she gets up and we saw her winning for The Aviator. But if she gets up there and she starts winning for this part, I think that, like, if let's say she wins one of the New York Film Critics, then she wins the Globe, and then she wins the SAG. Then she's probably going to win the Oscar. I don't think the Academy is going to give it to Sandra Bullock over Cate Blanchett if she's got the momentum. However, I could also see it going the other way. I could see Sandra Bullock getting all the acclaim and coming up and saying, you know, people said I didn't deserve it for The Blind Side, but now I can say I really deserve it. And that's a pretty powerful narrative. You know, there always has to be like a little Oscar story, usually with a winner. And Cate Blanchett doesn't really have one, but Sandra Bullock kind of does.
Yeah. Well, we actually just recorded a show on Gravity, and I made the somewhat bold prediction that I think that Sandra Bullock is probably going to win, just based on carrying this massive production single-handedly and pulling it off amazingly well. That, you know, notwithstanding, Cate Blanchett gives my favorite performance of the year in anything so far in Blue Jasmine, and we're both massive Woody Allen fans, so I'm kind of a split mind about this, and that's without three other contenders or people like Brie Larson, who really just honestly are too small to sneak in there.
Let it go, Corey. Brie Larson's out.
It's such a great movie, man. Wait till you see it. Okay. It's just great.
She's great in it. There's Emma Thompson coming up for Saving Mr. Banks, and she hasn't won lead either. And if the movie's really as good as people say, and it really is, they're hyping it up to be, it's possible she could win. You know, the thing about I agree with you about Sandra Bullock. I had that weird middle of the night epiphany too. I thought Sandra Bullock's going to win. She is going to win for this. There's nobody else can touch her. She carries the whole movie. She really does a good job. But that's right now. You know, who knows what. But in a couple of months, is Gravity's buzz going to die down? Is it going to get stronger? You know, I hear grumblings here and there about from certain people about her. It's the problem with being in the front runner spot as people start to complain. And I just don't know where it's going to go. She's won fairly recently, so it would be like a Hillary Swank type of situation if she won again, or Jodie Foster, and that's certainly possible. You know, if Gravity is as much beloved by them as it seems to be right now, then it's going to have to win a lot of major awards. It will certainly win a lot of the tech awards, and it could win Sandra Bullock the Oscar.
Well, one thing that I find interesting, if we're looking at, say, what's widely regarded as the five frontrunners for the Best Actress Award, you have Bullock, Blanchett, we've already mentioned Emma Thompson, but also you have Judi Dench and Philomena, and Meryl Streep, of course, in August of Sage County, despite whatever lukewarm reception it might overall be receiving. Those are five past winners. Those are five people who have all been there before and walked away with the gold. Now, last year is the first year I can think of where you've ever had an acting category, last year's supporting actor, where all five nominated guys had already won before. Are we headed, do you think, for that scenario, as unlikely as it is, again?
Oh, God, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I could see that happening. Meryl Streep's the one I suppose I worry about, because that movie's getting kind of, you know, mixed reviews.
Yeah.
And she's been to the dance so many times. The thing is Brie Larson could possibly bump her. You know, what they don't have in the race is any hot, sexy young women, and that's what they like. So if Brie Larson starts doing what Jennifer Lawrence did and what every actress has had to do, is like really tarting herself up and, you know, going on Maxime and like a G-string, she could really like do a lot to get herself in there. Sorry, but it's true. So if she, you know, if she starts doing that and people start noticing her, and then listen, in this town, you're not going to get noticed unless you play the sex card. And if she plays, if I could talk to her publicist, I would tell her that. I'm sorry it's gross. I'm sorry it's sleazy. I'm sorry it looks like anything to win, and maybe it's not worth it. But that's what you have to do.
But what if Judi Dench plays that same strategy? Then you've got a real race on your hands.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough call there.
I could see her doing that for sure.
And then, of course, you know, an unknown contender in Amy Adams in American Hustle. Who knows how big that role is?
Forget about it. Amy Adams. I totally forgot.
Yeah.
Another one, you know. So forget it. Brie Larson doesn't have a chance, I'm afraid. I wish she did, because I love that performance. But, you know, she'll earn enough street cred, and she'll get, next time she does something, she'll get noticed.
It seems like there's just a certain point where the front runner is established. And I know we've talked about that a little bit already. And nothing is going to stop it from winning. And we certainly had that last year with Argo. When Ben Affleck and Catherine Bigelow got snubbed, it seemed like it would open the door for Lincoln and Spielberg to just swoop in and win those categories. Yet it seemed to have the opposite effect. The snub seemed to all but guarantee Argo the Best Picture Oscar as a way to sort of make up for their mistake, and that's how at least, you know, the public might have perceived it. So why does it seem like these outcomes are decided so soon these days, and like as you're sort of counting down to the actual night when these awards are given out, nobody's mind has been changed, and you know, these campaigns are so effective now that people's minds are made up?
You know, it's such a good point, because who would have ever thought that would have happened to Argo and Zero Dark Thirty? We still don't know whether if Ben Affleck had been included, if it would have won. We just have no way of knowing that. We can only assume based on the timing, which was Zero Dark Thirty was winning everything until it got kind of squashed, and then Argo started taking over. I don't think Lincoln still would have won. It just doesn't seem like it had enough. It would have won maybe more Oscars if they'd liked it. Maybe Life of Pi could have beat Argo. But the thing is we still don't know. And, you know, this year the timing is almost exactly the same as it was last year, meaning the DGA will likely, or the Oscar voters will likely make their director's picks before the DGA announcement. There's like one day crossover. So it's still usually when the way it's worked in the past is that there's enough time for Oscar voters to be influenced by the DGA. The DGA puts out their five director nominees, and usually they match, give or take one or two, with Oscar. Well, that isn't what happened last year, because the dates were so screwed up. The Oscar voters had to turn in their ballots before the DGA announced their five nominees. And that's basically going to happen again this year. So we might have a weird director, you know, problem like we had last year. Same kind of thing. But, you know, beware the movie star in the race. If you're Ben Affleck, you're not just some director, some weird European director that a lot of people are writing great reviews about your movie. You're Ben Affleck. You're the comeback kid. You're somebody everybody knows. So everybody feels the snub deeper, and then he's a big actor. So the narrative just became stronger and people were talking about it even. People who really didn't follow the race knew about his, Bill Maher was joking about it, you know. When you're that well known and you get snubbed like that, people notice. If you're some unknown guy and you don't get a director nom, nobody's going to care.
Yeah, if Ben Zeitlin had gotten an Oscar snub last year, people still don't know who Ben Zeitlin is despite not getting snubbed, but nobody would have raised an eyebrow about that.
Right. So let's say Monuments Men is seen and it's like, oh, wow, that's the greatest movie anybody has seen this year. And then George Clooney got snubbed. That might, you know, set into motion something, but probably not because, you know, it's a latecomer and Argo had already been out. And so it's a different scenario, but it's worth paying attention to this year. Somebody should write something, I guess I will, about how the directors might be off again this year.
You've had opportunities to go to a lot more festivals, see a lot of these late fall contenders than we have, obviously. Are there any titles we should be watching out for, any smaller contenders or under-the-radar picks in any category, really, who might come up and surprise us?
Well, it's hard to say because, some people are talking about The Book Thief maybe mm-hmm. being a thing. They're certainly pushing it hard. Sometimes there's just some movie that is floating around on the periphery that most people aren't paying attention to that could enter the race and be a big deal. But for the most part, you know, I think we all do, since there's so many of us writing about it, we all do a pretty good job keeping that stuff out there in the conversation, and publicists do a good job making sure that we do. But, you know, if this were just a regular conversation and we weren't to people who covered the Oscar race, you know, I might say to you, well, oh yeah, have you heard of All Is Lost? You know, the J.C. Chandor movie with Robert Redford. But of course, because the Oscar machine is so slick, everybody already knows about that movie. It's not like, they're in the business to make sure you know.
There's no real sense of discovery of something like Spike Jonze's Her when it has been prepackaged with a gala premiere at the New York Film Festival. Everybody's pretty well aware of that.
Right. And of course, the Coens, Inside Llewyn Davis, is one of my favorite movies of the year. And that's a great one to watch out for. I don't know how it will fit in with the Oscar race at all, but it's a great movie. And Nebraska, of course. I hope that people start talking about it because it is worthy of attention. It's great.
Box office obviously plays a role in this, too. Unfortunately, it's not always just about the quality of each film. And in these titles that you're listing here, like The Nebraskas and Inside Llewyn Davis and Her, these are the films that I know that I personally am interested in, but might not be factors late in the game, even if I'm a big fan of them. But can you imagine The Book Thief generating as much buzz on, like, Twitter and factoring into the race? It just seems like is like Gravity, you know what I mean? It just seems like these smaller movies just get sort of thrown to the side as these big ones that do manage to make money and get people talking online in the public and also among the pundits and the critics and things like that. And there are films that get actors excited and these Academy voters. It's hard for me to believe that these smaller movies will ever really have their day at the Oscars again.
Well, you know, A Serious Man got a Best Picture nomination.
True.
Then. Yeah.
You know, Winter's Bone got in there. I mean, that's one of the most wonderful surprises I've seen recent memory. I love Winter's Bone. I saw that, you know, in a theater, walked out raving about it, and this girl nobody knew who gave this wonderful lead performance, and, you know, look where we are now.
Right.
I don't know. I mean.
Yeah. The thing is that back then in 2010, they had 10 nominees, which mm-hmm. meant voters put down 10 of their favorite pictures of the year, which meant that they could be kind of free with what they put. They didn't have to just pick Oscar movies. They could pick movies like District 9 or Winter's Bone or, you know, movies that didn't necessarily scream, oh, it's going to win Best Picture. And that, I think, allowed for a much more diverse slate. Now, since they've chosen to go back to voters only putting down 5, and they still extend the number of Best Pictures between 5 and 9 or 5 and 10, but the voters only put in 5. And so each movie has to have a certain number of number one votes to get in. That's how a movie like The Book Thief, unless it's really, really good, is going to lose, because it's not just going to be someone saying, oh, you know, number 10, oh, I'll put down The Book Thief, why not? It's more like, this has to be my top 5 favorite films of the year, and it has to have a lot of number one votes, people putting it at number one to get into the Best Picture race. There isn't a nominee in the race that won't have a certain amount of number one vote. So that's what I always think when people are talking about movies like Rush, right, which is kind of falling by the... you know, or I guess Nebraska or any of these movies. I can't remember the perfect example I was thinking of. It's like, it's a good movie, but how many people are going to actually put it at number one? This is my favorite film of, you know, so that's how you have to think of it. And The Book Thief might very well be a lot of those old timers' favorite movie. It's about, you know, the Holocaust.
Was Spring Breakers the movie that you were thinking of? And can you guarantee me that James Franco will get a supporting actor nomination? The one that he deserves?
It's something like that. It was a movie like that that people were thinking, you know, oh, do you think this has any chance of getting? And I always have to give that speech, which is, you know, these guys are, what, over 50, most of them, sometimes over 60. And you're talking about their number one favorite movie of the year. And that can hurt a lot of newer, younger type films.
Well, that means I've got to pay a visit to you. I don't know how many people who had Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close at number one on their lists a few years ago.
That is
shocking, even still.
That was one of the weirdest things that's ever happened in the Oscar race. I still don't know how it happened. I really don't. Other than the fact that this is all I can think about it this way, is the Academy's ruled by actors. There are, what, 1,200 actors. Every other branch has like 200, 300 smaller groups. They're split up around. And Extremely Loud had a pretty big ensemble cast with a lot of vets, you know, and those vets, each of them, Sandra Bullock, Max von Sydow, whoever they are, they have their own network of friends and people they work with. And Stephen Daldry certainly is well connected that way. So all those could have added up to enough number one votes to get it in the race. The more actors you have in your film, the more well-known they are, the better chance that you can rally the actors behind you.
Well, I hear that Spring Breakers is Ed Asner's favorite movie this year, so everybody better watch out, because whatever Ed Asner says goes, apparently.
Yeah, it's just not going to happen.
Oh, it's too bad. Well, folks, go to awardsdaily.com. Follow Sasha Stone at awardsdaily on Twitter. Sasha, we really appreciate it. Thanks so much for making the time.
Oh, thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
So that was it?
That was great.
Yeah, I thought that went really well.
Yeah, I really did too. And it was a pleasure talking to somebody whose work I've admired for a really long time, since before the great copyright catastrophe that moved her to Awards Daily back in the day.
Yeah.
We don't want to step on any copyright toes here.
No, not at all. Not at all. So folks should definitely check out awardsdaily.com. Follow Sasha Stone at awardsdaily on Twitter. And until next week, I'm Ben Flanagan.
And I'm Corey Kraft. This is Aspect Radio. Thanks for listening.